Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon or good evening, depends on where you're joining us from. Welcome back to the Localization Fireside Chat. I am Robin Ayoub. And if you are running any kind of go-to-market motion, sales revenue operation or RevOps, or you're just trying to grow your business, today's conversation is going to be hitting differently for some of our audience. My guest is the co-founder and CEO of Lucia Platform. He started the side project on Chrome extension as a Chrome extension in 2016 and now trusted by over 1.5 million sales professionals worldwide. I can't wait to dig into that and get to find out a little bit more about Lucia and my guest today. But more interesting than the number is the idea driving everything. He has declared the age of manual prospecting officially over and built an entirely new category around what comes next. Something he calls sales streaming. Think less cold call theater, more Spotify on your next best customer or for your next best customer. I will be sitting down today with Yoni Sureya to talk about building an AI first company that actually ships why accuracy beats automation every single time and what future selling really look like. So let's get into it. Yoni, welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat. For those tuning in, Yoni Sureya is the co-founder and CEO of Lucia, a company he built from coding a side project like I'm doing right now with some of my apps. I started coding a few things into a global AI-powered sales intelligent platform trusted by over 1.5 million sales professionals. He bootstrapped for five years, then raised $245 million venture capital funding, and he reached $1.5 billion valuation. Congratulations, Yoni. His team of 330 plus people uses AI daily, 96% of them. And before we even spoke, already following his story, because 500 million musical brand his team produced in 3 weeks using only AI tool, full orchestration, actors, fireworks, the works out there. We are going to get into all of this. Yoni, great to have you with me. Thank you for being a guest on the channel. I can't wait to get to know you a little bit. So let's get into it.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I'm very excited to be here. Yeah, so I'm Yoni, 41 years old. As you said, I founded Lucia 10 years ago. It was a decade of both funding a company and raising four children with my wife. So it's a busy decade, but very rewarding. So happy to be here and talk on, you know, the journey and whatever interests you.
So thank you, Yoni, again, one more time. So as we get started on this conversation, which should take us about an hour to go through, the first question that comes to mind is the story question. I know you live in Tel Aviv, if I remember this correctly. Yeah. And you're a father of four, you're 41. What is the story? What got you to where you are right now from your days at AT&T and iOS developer, et cetera?
Yeah, so that's interesting. I mean, I never thought that I will be at this point or at least running a company with so many employees, if I can be honest. Everything happened, you know, one step after another. I'm a builder at my heart. I love to build stuff. So whenever I get passion to build something, I just, you know, put my hands on, start to build, thinking about it at night, then go after the day afterwards, I continue. And this is like the first few years, the several few years, this is what I did. I started as a mobile app developer, develop a lot of applications, learn how to work with data. And then around 2016, there was an idea to build a service for professionals that wants to connect with other professionals over the web. And then we founded Lucia, and the same story happened there. We just started to build it, acquired users, fix their problems, answer to their questions, and this cycle continued for a few more years as a bootstrap company until, you know, we founded. But the essence or the core is the same. You just build, you always think, you know, what's your strengths, what you can do better than others, and try to build it and grow through that.
Now, you were known internally for the company as the phone guy. I don't know who told me this, but so you built an entire career centered around phone as a sales tool. What changed?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but somehow, you know, I started with mobile apps, which is phones. I fixed stuff on address books, and then I founded this company. So I somehow got attracted to matching and profiles and contact details. And because, you know, there was a pretty big need for that on the web, I found use case and it became a business. So I didn't choose that. It's just was a nice and interesting problem to solve and fix.
Now, I know that your partner, Asaf Einstein, who came from a business HR tech world. And I think, you know, from when you guys started the conversation, you went from, you know, Asaf probably wanted to have data, only data. And I think what I'm feeling here from based on the research I did, he sort of, if you correct me if I'm wrong, he pushed you to code thinking over and user impact thinking. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I mean, not exactly. I mean, back then, Asaf had a company with different needs. And he showed me, you know, other services on the web that I had a lot of data. So he knew that. And he showed me an industry which I didn't know. And then I just started to build that. And I started as a B2C. I was the B2C guy. And then, you know, when I saw this industry, I become a B2B as well. So, I mean, the ability to build that came from the things I built. And after, you know, a few years, I joined and started to be part of it.
And how did it feel to go from I build things to I am building a company now, dealing with people versus you said you're a builder? So I don't know, how does it feel for you to operate a company with a few hundred people in the organization you're responsible for versus what your passion is in building things?
Yeah, well, it's pretty similar in a way. First of all, yeah, I mean, I spend more time with people, but even when I spend time with them, I talk about building. So I try to understand what they build. I like to see, you know, outputs. I like to see, you know, the product, website. I like to see the real stuff. So I'm building by, you know, talk with people about what they build. And there are always things that I do, which this is my current building. So even if it's building presentations and even if it's building whatever, like, you know, preparing to meetings, it's about being in doing. It's about, you know, always try to, you know, update what you say and what you do in the best way you can. So it's different, but because I'm not only in front of screens, but it's the same essence.
Now, Lucia, you've bootstrapped that company for almost five full years before raising, you know, capital or outside capital. What did those early on years teach you that a $40 million check doesn't?
Good question. First of all, you know, I think we had the ability to build a company and generate revenue pretty fast after we founded the company, because we did PLG pretty early on when there was not even a term PLG. And back then we were able to grow the company. I think, you know, the reason we raised fund was that we wanted to build a bigger company and start doing, you know, faster product, go to market, hire more people for sales and marketing budgets. So then we hired fund. I must say that, you know, I think today, when you think about companies today, how can you build a company with AI? And what is the dependency on external resources? I think that it is less and less dependent on external fund. And I think, you know, you can build bootstrap or go further with bootstrap and grow fast because the capabilities are mainly not dependent on resources like they used to be in the past. So I think it definitely changed the dynamic in the company. You know, some things for good, some things for bad. But I think today the choice is much wider for founders and entrepreneurs, like what path they want to choose.
In terms of what they want to do, how they're going to be funded?
Yeah, if you don't have to raise fund to build a company today. You can really start building, you can start selling, and you can grow from there with very limited amount of people. So
right.
I think, you know, if you think 20 years ago, everything was sales, enterprise sales, you only had to raise fund to build this go-to-market motion. I think when we founded Lucia, like 2016, we did PLG, so it was a pretty new thing, but it allowed you to just, you know, purchase with credit card. I think today it's even more possible.
Yeah. You know, it's anecdotally, and I share this with the audience, is that, you know, Yoni is bringing a very valid point. Nowadays, you can build anything you want and you don't need a lot of investment to go out and start selling something. The idea is to find a customer that wants to buy something from you. And then you can code around that. You can build around that. So whatever the idea is that you're trying to solve or the problem that you're trying to solve to a customer, you can go back and build something around that. It's pretty simple nowadays. Anybody can do that. I say that that with a caveat. You need to know what you're doing to build something. And so I say this with all due respect to everybody out there, is that you know, in my case, for instance, an entire production system that I use on this podcast, now it's being coded and automated from the beginning to end. And, you know, I've got a background in computer science, and I've done my share of coding early on in my career, but I'm not a coder now. I mean, I don't consider myself a coder, 30 years detached from that. So I'm back to it now, and I'm doing some good stuff out there, but the possibility is there. Back to your point, Yoni, the possibility is there. You don't need a major investment to get going. Now, you've described yourself as someone never been a salesperson, yet you built, you know, one of the most used sales tool out there. Does this outside perspective or lens still help you today, do you think, Yoni?
I mean, I'm a product person. I'm a data person. So I love to solve problems. So I see myself more as a product person than anything else, data and products. So I love to build data. I love to build products, and I love to build use cases. Some of them are now for sales, but not only. I don't think it's helped me. I think if I was more of a salesperson, it would have given me more things that I miss today. I think I need more of that. There are always the areas which are natural to you and the areas that less. So I think this area is less natural to me. And if I was a salesperson, I think, you know, better things could happen there, but probably vice versa, other areas would be less good. So I can't say that it helps. I'm just saying that, you know, you grow with your strengths and what you're good at. So that's what I did.
Just curious, what does the name Lucia mean, or where did it came from?
Lucia, it started as you know, like a personal assistant back then. You know, there was Siri on Apple launch Siri. So we thought Lucia is like your personal assistant, secretary, helps you get phone numbers, helps you get email addresses, like helps you, you know, find people. That's how it started. And people love that. It's a name that's a rise smile on the face. So I think it's worked.
So normally sometimes I hear like these people, they tell me, or guests, they tell me, you know, I created the name based on, you know, my kid's name or my wife plus me, or, you know, I've got some story. But I love asking the question because it's always intriguing and interesting where how people come up with names. Now, Lucia grew primarily through product-led growth as what I've seen out there. I haven't been, I haven't subscribed to Lucia, although I'm looking for a product like Lucia right now. So I may give it a try after our conversation here, because I do fractional CRO and I consult with, you know, small to medium business owners. And most of the problems that we are trying to fix on the go-to-market side, on the revenue side, is the top of the funnel. How do we get more meetings? How do we get more calls? How do we get more interaction with our customers? And to do everything we want to do as salespeople, and I've spent the majority of my career in sales, it is right now, today, is one individual cannot possibly do everything that needs to be done on a day-to-day basis. The customers are being flooded with stuff, digital market, digital media. Some of it is fake. Some of it is good. Nobody knows anymore. To discern what's real, what's not real in the eyes of the customer as a salesperson is trying to reach out to these customers becomes really complicated. So you've grown the company from a product-led growth. People found it, signed up, and started using it without any sales teams. You know, this is someone for me who came from an engineering and later on to sales. How did watching that happen? Like, what did you think about going to market at this point? People found it and they started signing up. Did that change the strategy later?
I mean, people signed up, but, you know, there's a lot of work to make this work. So first of all, you know, they need to understand by themselves the product, which is always a hard task. So you need to make everything simpler. But you add stuff all the time, so you make it complex all the time. So that there is always, like, to do good PLG, you have to make things simple, and that's always a challenge. But also, it's also not enough because, you know, the product needs to deliver, and then also you want them to talk to sales if they need bigger stuff. I think we didn't have the problem of, you know, top of funnel or user acquisition because a lot came, but retaining them, making them loyal customers, happy customers is always a challenge for every product. So that's, you know, how we think about it. But for the other point that, you know, you said, you know, people are overloaded today with a lot of products, a lot of email materials, marketing materials, this kind of stuff. We see that everywhere. The way we think, because we are providing data for that, the way we think about it is that the world is basically now in shift from spray and pray approach, like you're emailing, trying to bombard everyone. That was, you know, in the last few years, it still happens. But I think customers starting to ignore that and doesn't have capacity or attention for that. And I think the industry is moving to lower amount of leads, but very, very high quality with the reasoning that you know why they're higher quality. So you can invest more time and effort in the real good ones, but you basically try to filter the noise and have fewer leads with higher conversion at any given moment. And this game of prioritizing and understanding where exactly the customers I need to reach out every given moment, it's a data game. You need to aggregate a lot of data with, you know, context to the machine so the machine can give you like reasoning why that lead is better than the rest. So that's, I think, in general, where the industry is going, whether, you know, to overcome the noise, you need to have quality.
You know? Now, for those who don't know you and the listeners out there who say to me right now, thinking right now, saying, who is Lucia? What does it do? What is the functionality of this tool that we're talking about? Could you give us the 100,000-foot level sort of description? What is Lucia?
Yeah, so Lucia is a go-to-market intelligence platform. We have data on all the companies, all the contacts that that exist in the world, every trend that happened in those companies, you know, hiring, firing, funding, opening sites, launching new product. We just know everything that happens in the business world. So when you are looking for potential customer and you don't know who to reach out to, we help you find the best companies that you need to reach out to at every given moment because they fit your ideal customer. I think the next step and what we are now providing, which is pretty new, is that you can now provide to us context that is specifically to you. For example, list of successful ones, your, I don't know, deck of ICP, the customers that you have that you want to reach out to. And we just understand that. We take the agent and we give you personalized list that you need to focus on. So we are basically have a huge database which you can search, and we are the next step is that you don't need to search. We understand what you need. We just give it to you on the spot.
And Yoni, who is your ideal customer? I know you mentioned earlier B2B, but there are a lot of, especially in the area where I work, there's a lot of fractional entrepreneurs that they're, you know, consultants and executives, and they, you know, like myself, trying to build companies. But there are also the medium-sized companies, the larger organizations. Where does the product fit?
I think wherever you have a sales organization in the company, that's ideal customer for us. So let's say organization with 20 sales reps and above, it's the ideal customer profile. You know, you have a CRM, you have a sales organization. That's in general. The persona itself, we want to talk to, you know, VP sales, rev ops, sales ops, all those people who build workflows, who build the infrastructure for sales organization. We look on Lucia as the data infrastructure for your go-to-market. You can take a lot of data, you can push it to your teams, to your agents. It gives context to your agents so that the salespeople that you have in your company will spend more time with customers and less time with research, prioritization, enrichment, and all this kind of work that machine should do. So we are the data that feeds that.
So when with data comes integration, how does that work?
We are fully integrated today with any platform out there. So you can consume the data directly from our platform. You can use it through AI stores like Claude, ChatGPT, and those stores. You can use it inside your CRM with it, if it's Salesforce, HubSpot, and stuff like that. And you can use it through workflow systems like, you know, Clay, NA10, all the workflows hubs, Make, Zapier, those kind of things.
Now, you mentioned something, or I've read somewhere where there was the conversation around, Lucia is the ways for salespeople. The framing is pretty interesting, but crowdsourced data generally comes with a bit of a caveat on accuracy, consistency, etc. How do you make that sure that data itself is coming from trusted source A and it's consumable in a formal way?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I mean, one of the main challenges is to understand accuracy and what type of data is accurate. So we invest a lot in logic and algorithms that, you know, identify statistically what should be accurate. But also in addition to that, there is the user base. And the user base provides us feedback with, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, whether data point is good or not. And so we can know from users' feedback if we are getting better or worse with our data that we provide.
Now, I've heard somewhere that you've said it publicly that Lucia wasn't using its own product as intensively as its power users are using it. Is that still true, or that has moved on from there?
So as you mentioned earlier, we were PLG, and a lot of our customers just signed up. So we always spoke with users that already use the platform. And the product we sell is basically for outbound when you need to reach out. So we never did that. But what happened to us recently is that everything become agentic, and our RevOps is building agents to enrich lead score, prioritize everything internally, and even doing outbound with an agent. So we started to use and eat our own dog food with an API, just use all the data and build the workflows internally. And I think it's really fun, and it's really helped us to improve and know what works and what doesn't in our platform.
I read somewhere that you have 280 million verified contacts in the database. At what point does more data stop being the moat in this case?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I think more data is always a good thing. But in general, I think contact details, contact data is not a moat. It's hard to do it well, but it's not impossible. And I think as time moves on, there will be more and more companies that will do it. And intelligence will move from just having the data, going to be easier over time, but providing intelligence, like what should I do based on this data? What are the best customers to me right now based on this data? That's where the industry will go to. This is where we invest our time, because you wouldn't want to spend time on database searches. You just want the AI to tell you what to do. And that's different technology based on the same asset.
Something interesting came up as I was doing the prep for this call. You posted on LinkedIn that your creative team is one person. That's surprising to everybody. And that person shipped a full musical brand ad with actors, live bands, firework, the whole production in 3 weeks for $500. Walk me through the exact process, if you don't mind.
Yeah. First of all, I'm not sure I know the exact process, because I'm not the creative guy.
Somebody else does, right?
But in general, I can say that he used several tools of AI that, you know, prompt that build the video. And he created a script. So he created a script with Claude, with few scenes, and then you take everything, you put it in the AI generator video, you generate the video with the same actor every time. It's like this, you give it the image, and then you get six different scenes with the same actor. So it looks like same movie. And then you edit it together, and suddenly you are creating a production just with AI. If in the past you should have, you know, hire people, bring cameras, now you do it with AI and you just publish it on the web. So I just think for ads and stuff like that, it's a transformational approach on how to do stuff.
Congratulations. That's good.
Thank you.
The one thing I would like to ask is, most companies I talk to, they're still going through the transformation, the AI transformation. And what I mean by that is the culture inside of that organization, most of these organizations, is either pushing back, or, you know, the buy-in is not there. People afraid of using AI. Some people are. However, your team uses 96% of your team uses AI daily right now. And it seems to me that, you know, you either enticed the team to use AI, or you figure it out, you know, it's good for them to use AI. How did you get to that 96% of utilization of AI in your team?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, it's a complex and iterative process that happens, you know, every week in the company. And it's not, even those 96%, there are levels of adoption. It's not the same. So I can talk about it from a few angles. First of all, I think that, as you mentioned, it's culture. This transformation, it happens so fast, and everything changes so fast that you cannot hire those people, bring them in, and you become an AI first company. You have to teach your existing people to be curious, to use AI, because it have to come from within. It changes every day. If you don't build a company that with a curiosity inside, you won't pace up, you won't be in the, you know, in the pace of learning, and it just, things are going to move so fast, you're going to be behind all the time. But first of all, it's about curiosity. It's about having the courage and let people believe that they can have mistakes. It can be not perfect. They need to have the you know, security that they can try stuff. It might not work. It might spend time, but give it a shot, because if it works, it's scalable and it's much better. And I think what we're trying to do is we did it for several things. First of all, we think that every department right now in the company needs to work like product and R&D. Like even marketing, we have builders, people who just know how to build AI. They're not marketeers. They're just, you know, they're builders. They know how to use Claude Code. They know how to build stuff. And they work alongside with marketeers. So they are like, they're the development team. And so then the marketeer had the ideation, but the team of the builders helped them build. And we use that framework also in sales, and we're now trying to do it also in finance and HR. We just want to have builders everywhere alongside with the people who are, you know, the professionals that give the professional touch. I say that in addition to that, we're merging roles and we are shrinking resources. Sometimes people like say, whoa, but what can I do? But then when you face a new reality, suddenly when you have constraints, then creativity increases. If you don't have constraints, then you don't need to be creative. So I think you have to put constraints on teams. You have to reduce resources so the creativity will come, because they won't have a choice. That's another approach. We invest a lot in our data infrastructure internally in the company. I think if you want to be a company that works well with AI, the data need to be accessible so you can build agents on that. You can have access to data. You give cloud to everyone. You give all the tools. You just let them work. And you know, it's a lot of efforts like that allow people to open their mind. Another thing that we're doing, for example, we have kind of an all-end every 2 months or something for the whole company that is basically like 1 hour or so where people from the company present what they did with AI. You know, the best thing that you can think about that happened, because it gives a lot of ideas to other people. So you need to make people believe it's possible, to be curious. And the most important thing is to put there on the stage, not just engineered, but people like, you know, like me and you that can build stuff. And then everyone feels, oh, if they did it, I can do it. So it's a lot of efforts just to adopt that and create the momentum.
So how did you solve the difference between we use AI tools to we trust AI tools enough to ship a final product with it? Like we talk a lot about on the channel, human in the loop, QA processes, vetting, etc. How did you manage that process?
Well, I think everything starts as, you know, as a POC, as a human in the loop. But if you run with human in the loop for a while, maybe you can trust it to work autonomously. And it cannot be in every process, depending on the risk that, you know, that behind it. But, you know, support, customer support, and SDR, a lot of things that can really work autonomously. And you need more people to monitor it and improve it. It's like everything become like a product. You are releasing an agent that do customer support. So you release version 1.0. Great. That's the work starts now. You need to release version 1.1, 1.2, version 2, version 3. You need to improve it. So you always have the developer behind it that try to improve success rate, but it's never ending process to improve this agent and the results. So think about it as it can be in production, but it's never good enough. So you always need to improve it.
And you know, this is for the audience. I mean, we talked a lot about this one. I always say AI projects or AI product in general, there are not one and done. You cannot just develop a product and, you know, call it a day, go hang out on the beach somewhere. It's not going to work for you. When we develop products, you have to keep an eye on them. You got to continue tweaking them. The models are changing. The large models are changing. You got to adapt. If nothing else changes, if the user doesn't ask you to change feature or functionality, there are many changes happening in the background that you need to keep an eye on. And I think that's what Yanni is talking about. When you launch something, A, you have to launch it. I mean, that's the biggest experimentation. You launch something, you put it live, and then you start working from there. You start adjusting the engineering part of it later. Just a personal question for you, if you don't mind. Yanni, what is the one AI tool you personally cannot live without right now?
I'm not that sophisticated. I'm just, you know, Claude GPT and Gemini all day long. I'm not building a lot by my hands, but if you have to choose one, it's Claude. I think it's doing amazing things.
So is there the you know, this is where, you know, everybody talks about it, to be honest with you. Everybody I've been in conversation with, I host an AI exchange networking event on Fridays and Friday mornings, Eastern Standard. If some of your team members are interested in popping in and saying hello, just let me know. Happy to invite your team. We talk a lot about the trust factor. The holding back, if you will, is it a psychological thing? Do I trust it? And so is there a version of AI adoption right now that moves too fast that you think could break things? You mentioned that you give people freedom, liberty to try to, you know, but you put constraint on them to try, because if somebody has five people in their department and they're supporting each other, if you say, well, no, we don't need four, we need two, those two now need to figure out what they need to do with the other work that needs to be done. How do you address that whole trust factor?
First of all, I think, you know, it's always a big thing. First of all, I think everyone who uses AI needs to know that AI is not 100% bulletproof and AI has mistakes. And I think it will always be like that. Like human beings, everyone has mistakes. So I think there are areas where you can live with mistakes, maybe more, maybe in support tickets, depending on the business. But for example, there are areas where you can live with mistakes, but if you see the outcome well enough, then it's okay. And there are areas like finance when you cannot live with mistakes. So I think it's really depend on the mission. And as mentioned, I see the adoption of AI and the involvement as an iterative process, not something that just launch at work and you forget about it. It's constant improving and constant versioning. So the trust builds over time. At the beginning, there is less trust, but you only expose it to 10% of your customers, and then you improve it. And when you gain more trust, you expose it to 20% of your customers. And when you improve it, and suddenly you have a good version, but then you continue to improve it and monitor it. So I think it's something that builds over time until you get to a point that you are happy with the results statistically, because it will always be statistical. It's not always going to be perfect.
Now, let's get into the part of the conversation where I'm interested, very interested in is sales, because revenue is a problem for everybody, specifically in North America, where the economy is the way it is. I live in Canada, in Toronto, and the economy in Canada and general, you know, the US is doing better than the Canadian market, but Canada is going through some tough time right now on the economy side. So you've called manual prospecting a tax on sales team. And I totally agree with that, by the way. I think manual prospecting is a nightmare in this day and age. We should not be doing that. Would you mind explaining the framing? Because most sales leaders still think that activity volume, and if they're managing a sales funnel for, you know, you mentioned your ideal customer is 20 salespeople. If a VP of sales managing a sales funnel, first thing they look at the activity level. I did that all my career. Activity level, emails, calls, meetings. Quotes out of the door, those kinds of things. Those are the activities. If we equate activity with effort, and that means equal result down the road, that formula seems to be gone away now, because, you know, you can have a salesperson with tons of activities with zero revenue. So let's talk about this, you know, manual prospecting done, gone. And now let's get into automated or auto prospecting.
Well, I think I will separate that for two. First of all, prospecting, it's a very specific process that you do manually on browsers, and you have companies, you search for profiles, you see if the companies are, you know, valid for you. Those kind of things can happen with agents. Those kind of things can happen, you know, with API today or with Claude. You can connect Lucia to Claude, you can ask what you want, you get everything, you know, and in Claude, and if you need to search on the web, Claude will do it for you. So I think doing that manually today is a waste of time. That's something agents should do. And the result should be that you spend less time on manual work, on admin work, and you spend more time with customers. I think, as mentioned before, the next evolution will be that the AI have access to all your data and can do the prospecting automatically, like without even you asking, like push, not pull. That's the next step. The way we think about calls and emails and stuff, because this also can be automated today. It's misleading. You can send a lot. It can do nothing. I think what we are measuring today is how many real meetings you do, like Zoom meetings like that. I mean, if you are not engaging with customer with a Zoom providing, you know, a real solution, then you're not really selling. You're not selling with outbound call. You may bring them to a serious call. So we are measuring serious calls. All the efforts before that need to lead to important, like meaningful conversations. That's how we measure it today. But I think the trend will be that everything that you can take out of the plate of the salesperson that is a manual work will be taken, and AI will do it. Agents will do it for them. And the only thing that salespeople cannot be replaced is to be in front of other human beings, build trust, build relationship, and really solve custom-made problems. So AI will do all the admin work, but people will be the face-to-face human beings in the near term and probably the midterm as well, and big deals.
No, you reminded me, because when I first joined the localization industry, well, 26 years ago now, I took on a business development team, close to a dozen people. And it was my first job in this particular industry. and I don't know the industry as well. Like, I'm just coming into the industry from a telecom and technology industry. And so I started asking question, you know, what are you working on? I mean, typical when you get on the job, what are you working on? What job are you doing, et cetera? And most my sales team at the time, they were telling me that they're working on responding to RFPs. And when I asked the question within a day or two or three or 4 days, they're still working on the RFPs. I said, well, who's doing the prospecting? If somebody is responding to an RFP, that means you're not doing the prospecting. So I like the idea, which I've been working on for many decades now, of eliminating the admin work and getting the salesperson to be good at what they do, which is being in front of the customer, conducting a conversation, closing a deal, you know, doing that interpersonal conversation with a prospect. And that takes away, that improves the productivity of the salesperson quite a bit. You know, if we're measuring close rate, revenue progression, velocity of the sales funnel improves dramatically. Now, you've used the Spotify analogy, which you called it sales streaming. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's. I think it's directly connected to the death of prospecting. So if you think about Spotify today, you're not searching for your next song manually every time, because that's what prospecting means. You search manually for the next contact every time. When you use Spotify, it learns your taste, it learns your preferences. You pick one song or one playlist and it runs and you like it. It learns what works for you. I think sales will go to that direction as well. The system learns what are your preferences, what type of lead works best for you, and what type of leads the system needs to prioritize for you first without you even searching in the whole catalog of companies. So that's the analogy of a system that's personalized your taste.
So that's the push versus pull that you talked about earlier?
Exactly. Anyway.
So, you said also the new KPIs, which we talked a little bit about it before, but to stress the point to the audience, it is not dials or open. Like, how many dials have you done? How many phone calls have you done? Or how many emails have been opened when you sent your email broadcast? It is time to engagement. How do you get a VP of sales who has been running their own team on activity, you know, the old classical way of running a sales team for many, many years, to genuinely buy into that shift? Or have they bought already?
Well, it's something that happens nowadays. First of all, it's just part of the funnel. I'm not saying phones and emails are not important, but they can be automated and then it can be, they does not represent success. So you have another KPI, which is the meaningful conversation, and then the closed one afterwards. So it's just another metric in the funnel. So if we are making 700 emails a month for a rep, but only one call per day, then we're just selling over email. That's not what salespeople need to do. That's agents. Agents can send emails. Very soon, that's what will happen because it's easy for agents to do so. It has all the context. It can be very polite and send like all this, everything. The key for a rep is to be in front of human beings, and we need to measure that human interactions. It's human interaction management because all the rest are coming agentic.
Yes. No, I can see that. No, for those of us out there who is listening to this conversation between myself and Yoni, and they're wondering, okay, so I am an SDR. I bought Lucia, for instance. I subscribe to Lucia. What does an SDR actual morning look like when they are a member of Lucia?
They start by searching their, you know, ideal customers, or upload a list of what are the ideal customers, and they can choose how to work with that. They can search manually. They can work inside Claude, and they can take Lucia's recommendation and just work on that list because Lucia starts to learn what works for you. It really depends on what type of playlist you want to choose. You want to search yourself, you want to build your list yourselves, you want to use inside systems, or you want to let the system generate it for you. The point is that I think you can rely on the most accurate data today on the planet, and very high coverage and accuracy. And so that's like the basis. And the point is that you can use it anywhere for a lot of use cases, and depending on what type of list you want to work, the one you built or the one the system built?
No, the reason I'm asking the next question is because I've been there before. You know, a couple of companies I worked before they had a CRM, and that CRM contained nothing but bad data. I would say it's salespeople putting a lot of data in that CRM that doesn't make any sense, either expired, emails don't work, people moved on, contact information is wrong, just bad data. And I'm not saying all of it is bad. I would say about 80-20. But it's very hard for a salesperson to decipher that. Now, an agent, an AI agent with bad data, as everybody knows, is worse than a human with a bad data. And it's pretty much scales up the mistake if there is a potential mistake down the road. What should a sales leader be asking before they deploy tools such as Lucia?
I think you touched it exactly. I think whenever you choose a data source to rely on, you need to make sure it's accurate. You need to trust the data that you feed to your agent, because once you feed it in, it might not be changed for a few years. So you need to trust the data, and you need to provide as many contexts as you can if you want to improve accuracy. So agents just works with quality of data and amount of data, and you need both.
Now, when a VP sales listening to this, they say, okay, I'm managing a CRM that contains noise. Instead of calling it bad data, let's call it noise. Is there a way that you know about, or an advice that you can give to those sales leaders to reduce the noise in their CRM?
Yeah, I mean, the first and obvious way is to, you know, use API with a valid data source. For example, you can take Lucia and you can enrich, clean up, update all your CRM or all the relevant records just to have updated overlay or updated layer of data. I can say that I see more and more companies starting to build their own views, not based on their CRM, like building custom views with Claude, taking data from Lucia, from CRM, from other usage of the product usage, and just created their own dashboards. So they won't need to switch every time between Salesforce pages. It's just time consuming. So I really see a trend where the advanced companies are not using CRM as a UI. They're using CRM as a database. And it's a major shift.
There's a theory, I've been talking about this on this podcast for the past 3 years, that eventually, you know, SaaS model for software will die eventually. And I don't know if I'm doing like a bad prediction for people. People are going to hate me for this, but I just don't see the need anymore for large, complicated deployments of these types of software. If what we're talking about today, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Evolutia 2026, which the new product that you're, it's the biggest evolution that you're describing here. It's going to take over. I would say, like, people are going to be at some point building their own tools and not necessarily going for, you know, the large complex deployments out there. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think that, as you mentioned, people won't want to use UI, like a lot of services, every service has different UI. I need to switch tabs. I consume all, you know, I need to combine context. You would want to build a centralized place and takes all the data from all the sources and provide you unified centralized view. And in the past, it was required to build website internally with developers, and it was very expensive and no one will give you that resource. Today, it's pretty easy. You take Claude with few connectors, you connect to everywhere, you build a website, you have your own custom dashboards, and then suddenly you don't waste time. And I think the trend will be that more and more companies will build their custom views, custom dashboards, custom UIs, and all the rest will be data sources, infrastructure.
Now, as we move along with our conversation, talk to me a little bit about Evolutia 2026. You described it as the biggest product evolution you ever made. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, last year, the platform was mainly focused, you know, we always sell great data. That's the main advantage of Lucia in a simple way. But up until last year, it was you mainly consume it through the user interface. What we've done this year, we shifted our focus that every data point that we have on the database and every capability, everything is accessible through API, through MCP, through Claude, through any integration that we have. We have like, you know, 20 integrations to the main platforms. So you can access the data everywhere. And we are investing a lot in that builders who build workflows for go-to-market will be able to rely on our data anywhere they want and anywhere their agent works. That's like the main shift. The second part is that we also allow our advanced intelligence that learns your context, learn your behavior and recommend you stuff to be available via API. So you can actually get your own personal leads sorted by our AI in any place you work. And this shift from, you know, interface to builders is the main shift and becoming fully integrated.
No, you mentioned API, and for the audience, you are now API first. That's what it sounds to me like. You want to integrate as much as possible. And you partnered with a company called Clay. In plain language, what does this going forward from a data layer perspective means to Lucia itself and the users down the road for years to come.
Furthermore, yeah, I think Clay is a great orchestration that you can build your, you know, multiple providers and do all the orchestration, but it's need to rely on quality of data as well. So we are providing data again in two layers. One, the largest volume of companies, contacts, and signals in the world. That's the objective data, what's happening in the world. And then the personal data that's relevant to you, the one based on your context. That's the agentic layer, if you like. And I think today the industry is mainly focused on data and customers are building the agents. I think in the future, we might see a world that the agents learn your needs and just push it to you. You just focus on selling.
Now, you know, also as a point of curiosity, it sounds to me like you're competing with Zoom Info, Apollo, and Cognizm, etc. These companies have massive scale with enterprise sales teams, and I wouldn't call it teams, they're more like an army. I know I've expressed interest at some point with one of them, I can't remember which, just merely going on their website. And I had like 20 salespeople calling me right just because I went on their website. And I haven't decided I want to buy anything yet. I'm just exploring. So your consistent answer, which I really love that answer, is accuracy over volume. What do you know about what matters that markets are not fully priced in yet in terms of, you know, we talk a little bit about noise in data here. I'm assuming it is the noise in the data from your competitors.
Well, first of all, I think they're doing great work in go-to-market, so I need to respect that. I think you know, today in the industry, it's you can acquire users, you need to retain them. So I think the main challenge is to keep them happy and make sure that you bring the right ones. We're not jumping on every lead. We don't think it's worth the time. You probably came from a good company if everyone 20 people jumped on you. So they saw you as a good potential. But in general, we believe that salespeople are necessary when the value increase, and the main value should be based on self-serve. You just need to buy yourself. That's how we build our company.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the regulations or the certification that you have. GDPR, CCPA, ISO certification. Most company compliance is a cost center. And I worked in an industry where it's horizontal industry, meaning it serves bunch of other sectors, and I'm assuming you are as well. Like, you're not specific to a specific industry. Whatever their salespeople, you're probably going to be involved in that, which requires you to have various, certification in place to allow for that comfort or safety and security for the data. And you know, for you, for Lucia, you made it part of the brand almost, not a cost center. Like, people gripe about that and they complain about how much these certifications are costing them out there. I'm sure there's a lot of cost in putting these things together, and I've been involved in a few. What does actually play in sales conversation against your competitors when you bring these conversations up?
First of all, we invest a lot in privacy and compliance as a data company. It's super, you know, it's an important fundamental part. Customers are asking for it. If we don't have it, you cannot sell for big customers, and we're pretty strict about it. I think in a lot of ways, we're probably one of the strictest in the industry. And as you mentioned, it's a lot of effort internally to invest in it. There are companies who are not investing in it at all. But I believe that you need to be trusted as a data source, not just by the accuracy of the data, also by that, but how you treat data, how compliant you are, and how you do things the way they should be done. So we see it as, you know, infrastructure that must happen.
There is a framing out there that's gaining a bit of a momentum, I guess, and I don't know what your view is on this one, Yanni, is the user interface or the user layer is being crushed. That's a pretty broad statement out there. That value of migrating to agent layer above and data layer below, it seems to be where people are going. Do you agree? And what does the future of Lucia looks like in more of an infrastructure from that perspective?
That's a great question. First of all, yeah, there are basically three layers: infrastructure, data, SaaS UI, and agents. And I think the SaaS UI in the middle is going to be smash between agents and infrastructure. We as a company, we choose to go to become in data and infrastructure as the main thing, as the backbone of what we do. That's what we do. That's what we sell. We think that the agent's going to be everywhere, and we just want to be the infrastructure that feeds them. But we also now start to build agents as well, just to provide better results, not just infrastructure. So we see ourselves doing both. And we see that the user interface will be less and less relevant in the future. So we're investing mainly in infrastructure integrations, and now we'll also start to do with agents as well, because we see that's coming.
Got a few wrap-up questions. They're very quickly here. We're going to round through them, if you don't mind, Yanni, as we come to an end for our conversation. A sales leader comes to you today and says, I want to build an AI-first go-to-market motion. Where should I start? What do you tell them?
With your RevOps. Hire a strong RevOps. Give, like, build the architecture of what is agents, what type of AI agents are solving in your sales funnels, or where you want people to be part of your funnel, and just try to automate every part that you can, that salespeople will be most of the time with phones, always customers.
You said instinct is critical for a founder, but instinct doesn't scale. What does that mean for someone like you who built an entire company on based on their gut feel?
Well, gut feel is very important, just, you know, to assess if things are right or not. You know, you need to sense, you need to know if it's right or not. That's an alignment that you feel inside your body, but it's not enough, because afterward, you just need to make sure this, it becomes a story, it becomes something people can look up to, and then it can scale down the organization. But it starts with a feeling that things are right or not. It starts with that.
What is the best advice, piece of advice that you received as a founder that you're still using today?
Do the things the way you think they should be made, not just by best practices. I founded a company in a very young age, and as a young entrepreneur, I got a lot of advices how to do stuff, how to build a company, how to hire people that are very mature, that, you know, and how things need to be made or to be done. And I figure out that whenever I try to do things just best practice, but it's not what's right for me, it didn't work, no matter how senior the people I brought. And the company, in order to be unique, in order to be great at something, it needs to be not like everyone else, not generic. So you need to find the things that are unique to you, that relevant to your strengths and your personality, that you can do different and stick with it, and be brave enough to stick with it, because that's how great companies are built, by uniqueness, by things that you're doing like not like everyone else. And I think when I started to do the things the way I believe, or the way that fits my personality, things went back to work like they were in the beginning, without, you know, too many recommendations.
So what does B2B sales world look like in 5 years, in your opinion?
I think there will be less salespeople. I think SMB salespeople will be agents. I think people like salespeople will be still very important, especially in enterprise deals, big deals, complex deals, infrastructure deals, those kind of stuff. But I think that if today a sales rep spending, I don't know, three calls a day with a customer, it might be double or triple, because AI will just take every other thing that they're doing and make sure that they spend more time with customers. So everything will become way more efficient per rep. And I think that today, good rep needs to be good in human, good in sales skill, good in a lot of, you know, technical stuff. In the future, you will have to be great at human, you know, interactions, because all the rest will be, the machine will do for you. So we just need to be great at selling to human beings, like human to human skills. That's what I'm saying.
That's right. Interpersonal skills. What do you wish more people understood about the future of selling?
I think everything happens faster than people thought. You know, agents that sells are not science fiction. I start to see it. So
I like that.
I think it's happening. I think you see SDR agents. You're very soon going to see AI that pick up the phone. So if you really want to prepare yourself for the future, you need to build the infrastructure of the data and the company strong, that AI will do the work for you.
Yanni, I want to thank you so much for joining me on this conversation today. Did we cover every topic that you had in mind? And is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I mean, I think we covered a lot. A lot of interesting part and things that happen in the world. So I enjoyed so much. And thank you. Thanks for inviting me and for the time.
I really appreciate your time with me today. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for joining me on this discovery conversation with Yanni Surya. And Yanni has been, like, for me, has been quite the eye-opening conversation, to be honest with you. You seem to be singing the same song I've been singing for many years. We need to focus on what good we are in terms of what our skills are as salespeople, and all that typing, entering data in screens, that's going to go away. The admin part is going to go away. And I can't wait for it to go away. We don't need it. We're good at doing what we do, these types of conversations. And that's how this podcast got created, by the way, because I love talking to people as much as I can and I could on a single day. So I want to thank you very much for joining me on this conversation, Yoni. For the audience, thank you so much for joining me on this recording as well. And thanks for listening in on our audio podcast. And also thanks for watching us on YouTube, if you're watching us on YouTube. And also thanks for checking out our blog, where I summarize these conversations, where I archive these conversations on our blog post for future research and future interest. And for me and Yoni, we're signing off here, and I'll see you guys at the next episode. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.